Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our interview with Dr. Madeline Castellanos, who is a psychiatrist, and she is an expert on the subject of human sexuality. So, Dr. Castellanos, when in the first part, you know, we spoke about potential breakthroughs, the pharmaceutical industry is looking for new drugs, possibly testosterone, erectile dysfunction medications are used for men to overcome obstacles to women's sexual response. How about this one? This will get the conversation started. Scientists have patented a new machine that will provide orgasms for women at the push of a button. They say it's smaller than a packet of cigarettes, and the machine is designed to be a medical implant that uses electrodes to trigger an orgasm. So the patient would receive this implant, this medical implant, in an operation where it is implanted under the skin of her buttocks. And so I can just visualize, you know, the man can take their Viagra, and then the woman can, you know, make sure that they've got their implant turned on, and you know, no problem, you know, just you know, super sex every time, never fails. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I've been reading up on this new product that's available, and it is a major surgery. It is, as you said, implanted under the skin of the buttocks. And I know it works because electrical stimulation, what it's doing is causing a contraction of the pelvic floor muscles at the moment that there's stimulation, and so then that can help trigger the orgasm. The difficulty that I have with it first is that it's invasive. It's kind of like putting a pacemaker in, and you're going to have that lump of the box that controls it, which is probably not going to be very sightly or comfortable. The other issue, too, is that...
It may be hard to go swimming.
Well, it's certainly going to be a little visible, just as a pacemaker would be on your chest.
Right.
I imagine that it would be on your buttocks as well.
Right, right.
The issue is that, you know, for women to reach orgasm, usually they have to be completely relaxed and with all thoughts except for the most sexy and erotic thoughts in their mind. So if they're thinking and sort of watching where they're at to choose the right moment to stimulate themselves to get an orgasm with this device, they're really not going to be thinking about very sexy erotic thoughts.
Well, they may be worried, you know, did I replace the batteries? You know, what if I run out of batteries? You know,
I guess that could be one concern, but the one thing that we see very, very often with sexual dysfunction in men and women is what we call spectating, where you're watching yourself.
It's like you're spectatoring.
You're spectatoring.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, English.
You're not expectorating.
You're
spectatoring when maybe you should be expectorating.
So you're watching yourself. You're kind of, you know, you're hyper vigilant as to what's going on, and you're not really in your own experience. You're outside of that experience,
right,
observing yourself.
Right.
And I think in order to trigger a device such as this, you would have to be outside of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to take away from your experience.
Right.
There's a very interesting phenomenon I've been speaking about with colleagues of mine just recently, actually, which is how women can have an orgasm, either stimulating themselves or their partner stimulating them. It could be very mechanical. Okay, it's an orgasm. It's great. It's fantastic. It felt nice. Or they can have these orgasms where it really takes over their entire being at that moment. The room seems to just fade away. They're not even in their bodies. It's like they're floating in space for those 8 to 10 seconds. And that's when they're really completely just surrendering to their erotic thoughts at that moment. You can't have that kind of an orgasm if you're going to be watching when it is you need to trigger a device to contract some muscles.
Right.
Not going to happen.
Yeah,
not
no, it's not natural. And actually, you know, I have to say that some men who use erectile dysfunction drugs or men that I've talked to who have either penile implants or they use the injections directly into the penis to give them an erection, they say that they can perform sexually and they can have an ejaculation, but they say the quality of the experience is artificial and they don't feel that it is equivalent to a normal pharmacologically induced sexual experience.
Well, I think, you know, traditionally our physical state of arousal has been a clue to us as to how psychologically aroused we are. And if that's sort of hijacked or we use a crutch, I don't want to say that in a negative way, but sometimes we need that. But if we're doing that, our brain doesn't have the sense of, well, how psychologically aroused are we really? Because we can continue to perform the action of sex, but not really be into the action of sex. And I think that's why that can happen for men and for women.
Well, do you think that, I mean, if for some people who may be listening to this, they may say, look, I don't really care that much about sex anymore. My husband seems to, you know, want to have sex, and I enjoy the cuddling and the intimacy. But, you know, all this talk about, optimizing your orgasms and floating off into space and having that transcendent experience for 8 to 10 seconds, I'm not that concerned about that. So is it okay to be a celibate? You know, many people are at this point. They're just going to decide, yeah, I'm not going to go there. Or if they have less the optimal orgasm with each sexual experience, should women feel bad? I mean, there's so much information that's being exchanged about this nowadays that, you know, women read the, you know, see TV shows and women's magazines that, you know, tell you all about this, that a lot of women feel really, it's made the situation worse for some women who may just not have that as a goal in their lives.
Well, you know, society has certainly placed a lot of importance on having an orgasm and what kind of orgasm you have. And
how many times a week do you have sex? You know, when Dr. Oz got on TV and he said, well, you know, my wife and I have sex, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. And a lot of people said, oh, my God, you know, then that's like the optimal thing. So make sure that you, you know, keep up with Dr. Oz because that's part of his health program. You know, you've got to eat, you know, eat your broccoli, have sex 3 or 4 times, a week, meditate, and make sure you do aerobic exercise and strength training. It's, I mean, it's hard to keep up with all those things.
When is their time and everybody's schedule?
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference, too, between having regular sexual activity that you really enjoy and sexual activity that is not really doing it for you. And that's also a very individual factor. You have to take into consideration, okay, is the sex that you're having good sex? Do I want to keep having it because it really contributes to my life? Now, there are health benefits to having regular sexual activity. It's been proven that
let's enumerate them because this is a health show, so you know the theme is not just pure hedonism. So, let's talk about that.
So once or twice a week, having regular sexual activity, you decrease your chance of a heart attack by 50%. You lower your blood pressure. You deal with stress better. Have less incidence of depression and anxiety. You have younger-looking skin because you release DHEA from your adrenals. You have less chance of dementia because you have better cerebral blood flow. And they've actually shown this not just with humans, but with rats, with these amazing studies that you actually grow cells in your brain when you have regular sexual activity.
Wow, it's kind of like exercise because they have BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that you literally can repair and rebuild your neurons. So sex is part of that, too.
Exactly. And, you know, I think the medical industry as well as the rest of society has artificially divided sexual functioning from the rest of our health, but really it's all the same anatomy. And so it's an artificial division. It's affecting all of our functioning because it's involved in the release of hormones and neurotransmitters, and that's very important for our functioning overall.
What about the magical substance called oxytocin, the so-called cuddle chemical? Tell us about that one.
So oxytocin is a hormone that is involved in bonding, and it's released especially right after orgasm. It gets metabolized quite quickly, about 5 minutes. But there's also an increased release, they've shown, for women when there is stimulation of their breasts and their bellies. And so a lot of times foreplay can really enhance the effect of oxytocin release for women. It hasn't been shown necessarily to have the same release for men with just stimulation, but at orgasm they do release it as well. And it really helps us feel calm and just really bond and feel good about the person that we're with.
It's actually also been proposed as a treatment for autism to give oxytocin because the lack of social skills and interpersonal connection in autism, they say it could be remedied with oxytocin because it's a bonding chemical of affection and affinity.
Right, and one of the difficulties that people with autism have is they have difficulty with the gaze, you know, looking into another person's eyes, which is very important part of the wiring of your brain, which oxytocin contributes to. And so
there's a lot of love songs about those, that gaze, looking into your eyes and so on. That's a very important part of, courtship. And
right. My eyes adored you.
Yeah.
So I think it's very promising. But again, it has to be used in conjunction with some other type of therapy, such as gazing or psychotherapy, because alone, you know, by itself, like I said, it gets metabolized very quickly. So it'll be very interesting to see how we can utilize the power of oxytocin to really improve our relationships.
Well, you are, in addition to being a sex therapist and psychiatrist, you're also very oriented towards natural therapies. Is there such a thing as, dietary suggestions, natural aphrodisiacs, you know, like you sometimes see, you know, the seven best natural aphrodisiacs improve your love life, on the cover of Cosmo magazine?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I just want to say, going back to this device, right, that we talked about, that's surgically implanted, I just wanted to point out that strengthening the pelvic floor, which is what this device actually does, it contracts the pelvic floor muscles, is a way to really improve your orgasms, because with each orgasm contraction, those are the muscles that are getting squeezed, the pelvic floor muscles. There are other devices out there that are not surgically implanted that also use electrical stimulation that can be used intravaginally, and with certain settings you can set it to have a rhythmic gentle electrical stimulation that will give you then contractions of your pelvic floor muscles.
Well, that's like a form of biofeedback almost, no?
Exactly.
It's electrical stimulation, which is a little different than biofeedback. Biofeedback would be to learn to contract your pelvic muscles voluntarily, like Kegel exercises.
Correct. But the problem with Kegel exercises is that many times women, either they forget to do them or they're not strong enough to get a good coordinated contraction of their pelvic floor, or they may be even squeezing the wrong muscles. Some of them are squeezing their gluteus or their abdominals and not really squeezing their pelvic floor.
Is that something that a medical sex therapist offers as part of, say, your repertoire in treating patients?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, on my website, there's a way to go to their site and order it directly from them, because you can get something like that online. And it has the electrical stimulation. And the one that the women can buy...
And this is not a sex toy. This is actually a medically proven way of sort of training your pelvic muscles.
Absolutely. Because it has that electrical stimulation that gives you that contraction of the pelvic floor. And the one that women can buy online is also very interesting, because you can also have vibration with it, and it has a clitoral stimulator as well. A woman can choose to either have the vibration or have the electrical stimulation or have both at the same time. Now, the interesting thing about this is that when you have internal stimulation, you're stimulating one part of the pudendal nerve, which is the nerve that really innervates the genitals. When you're getting external stimulation, you're innervating another part of the pudendal nerve. And the more parts of the nerve that you engage, the stronger your orgasms will be. So this device is something that women are not forgetting to use, because they really enjoy using it.
Yeah.
So it's really a wonderful way for doctors to encourage women to do their pelvic floor exercises.
Well, you know, they say, you know, the old line is, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And the answer is practice, practice, practice. And
right.
I guess, when you have a subnormal sexual response, or you haven't learned to harness your body's ability to respond sexually, you may need a little training. And there's, you know, we have to get away from this notion of shame and guilt associated with that.
Right. So this intensity device was actually derived from a medical device. The same company had a medical device that they use for stress and urge incontinence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done by prescription and set up in the doctor's office. But doctors found that when women were using this device to strengthen their pelvic floor, to be able to keep from losing their urine, some of them, a good percentage of them, were spontaneously having orgasms while they were using it. So they said, aha, this is a wonderful way to help prevent stress incontinence, but also improve sexual functioning.
In medical research, they call that serendipity.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to natural ways to improve, you know, your sexual functioning and your pleasure, one of the things before intensity came along that I used to recommend and many other sex therapists would recommend is vibrator therapy, where you would tell women to get a small vibrator and just place it in, turn it on, and leave it there 10 minutes every day. Because bringing the blood flow to the vaginal tissues would help maintain that functioning, even if they were menopausal. And it's been shown that women that continue to have regular sexual activity, even past menopause, will have much less incidence of sexual dysfunction.
So use it or lose it, basically, that's the principle.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, when I asked about natural therapy, I was thinking more about, you know, some herbal tea or advice to eat oysters, something like that.
Well, you know, oysters will boost your testosterone, and that's why oysters
really?
Are considered
aphrodisiac. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, okay. They're one of the main foods that can really boost your testosterone.
Okay.
So that's why oysters can work. But one of the things that I really like using is L-arginine.
Okay.
That helps maintain the arterial blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
Patients that used to smoke or still smoke, L-arginine has been shown to reverse some of that damage to the arteries to help get the blood flow back in that mm-hmm. area.
So you, unlike Dr. Gio Espinosa, who was on a couple of weeks ago on our mm-hmm. Intelligent Medicine podcast, you don't have a female equivalent of his product, Mr. Happy, which is the natural product. You know, like maybe you could come up with a Mrs. Happy. Well, that could
you know,
be
I'll talk to Gio about that. And
that could be a trademark infringement, though. I don't know. He may not go for it. He would want to split the profits with you, probably. At least get a commission.
Find a way.
Right.
I'll talk to him. He's a pretty reasonable guy.
Okay. But seriously, you did talk earlier about DHEA, and I use DHEA in my practice for women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we use it not just to improve libido and sexual response, but we use it to strengthen and energize and prevent loss of body mass, frailty,
right.
For osteoporosis. But it does have an impact on women's sexuality, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Women tend to need less of a dose than men need because they just have less anyway.
Yes.
Compared to men. But absolutely. And for some of the same reasons that testosterone gives you that motivation, DHEA helps also, but it helps with your skin and your collagen as well. So that's a plus.
So a dosage that might be acceptable for women is perhaps 5 or 10 or maybe up to mm-hmm. 25 milligrams. For men, it might be more like 25 to 50, I find, and occasionally more. But I like people to get tested for their DHEA. I don't generally like people to mess around with it on their own because sometimes you have too much already and then you take more and then you get into trouble or you're not taking enough.
And it's very easy to test in saliva for DHEA, so it's great.
Right. Another one that is proposed as a female aphrodisiac, maca. Any take on that one?
There's a lot of individual variation. Some people that have anxiety don't do well with maca. But again, you know, I want to see how they present and what's going on. If there's not an anxiety component, then I might recommend maca. I like recommending things like red Korean ginseng.
Okay.
Or pycnogenol, which is
circulatory enhancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think those are pretty effective for women as well.
Mm-hmm. Another one that has been touted as a female aphrodisiac, Damiana. Are you familiar with that one?
Damiana, yes. I don't use it as much.
Not that effective, and there can be some side effects, I understand. Also, and then, of course, there's the most traditional one, and really has caused a lot of problems, is Spanish fly, reputed to be helpful for libido. But what it tends to do is it tends to produce intense vaginal itching and burning, which is, I mean, I guess you could sometimes conflate that with a sexual urge, but it sure doesn't sound sexy to me.
No, and I wouldn't want to risk any liver toxicity either. Yeah, not something that I would recommend for women at all. And again, I think with women, they could be doing perfectly well physically, but emotionally, it's really going to trump their physical response. And so you want to make sure that they are relaxed and able to get aroused psychologically, because otherwise the physical response isn't really going to matter as much as it does for men.
And how do you achieve that? How do you get to that place?
One of the things I like to talk about with women is first, or what are their ideas about sex? Women are often taught that, they shouldn't have desire, that it's not ladylike to show that they have desire, that they might be dirty. Some of them aren't even given words for their own body parts when they're growing up. So how do you have a conversation when there are no words? So I really want to investigate that with women and say, how do they feel about being sexy?
And that's really the psychiatrist in you, that you're going try to probe, their underlying, their history and their attitudes.
Because there is that mind-body connection, and we can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I'm asked on the radio, people ask, well, how do I achieve, better sex life, or how do I overcome impotence or sexual dysfunction? I say, well, we're going to cut to a commercial. I want to build up the suspense. But when we come back, I'm going to give you a surefire cure for sexual dysfunction. Then they wait and they wait. The commercials roll by. And then we come back and I say, and here it is, the surefire solution for your sexual problems is to eat a healthy diet, optimize your weight and exercise. And then people go,
exactly.
Oh, geez, I waited for that. But isn't there some truth to that? Is that, if you're in bad shape physically, you're overweight, you're lethargic, you're sedentary, you just don't feel like a healthy, sexy animal.
No, of course not. Your blood's not flowing. Your arteries are all closed up. And, you don't feel good about yourself. You don't have that energy. So I absolutely agree with that. In fact, interestingly, you mentioned that. I was just reading yesterday about how they did these studies with women, having them do exercise, a good moderate exercise, very, very soon before they were going to have sex. And they found that when they could time it, in a very short period before they had sex, they actually had more desire and better sex right after they exercised.
That's really interesting. I always wonder, because I'm a morning exerciser, and then sometimes I walk by the gym and I see, these women on the elliptical machine like at 11:30 at night. And I go, what in the heck could they be doing? Maybe they've discovered the secret.
Maybe.
It's interesting because, I would think that would keep you awake and make it harder to fall asleep.
It might.
Another big cause of problems, and I think we have to touch on this before we sign off on today's interview, is drugs. And so many women and men, but we're talking about women primarily here, take various types of medications. So from your medical background, can you tell us which drugs are real libido robbers?
Absolutely. Well, number one would be antidepressants. That's just across the board. And unfortunately, people are getting them as if they were water nowadays. Mm-hmm. As a psychiatrist, especially as a sex therapist, when I have someone that comes to my office and says, I have no libido, and I have a hard time reaching orgasm, I just don't feel anything anymore, I want to find out, why are they on that medication? What is the real reason that they're on that medication? Did they have a major depressive episode? Were they hospitalized? Were they unable to function? Is that a necessary medication for them? Or did they just express a little bit of anxiety and dissatisfaction and got immediately placed on it? and usually along with a benzodiazepine, which is a tranquilizer. So that combination right there, an SSRI and a benzodiazepine, an antidepressant and a tranquilizer, it's going to knock out your sex life.
I mean, I've had women who've come to me and they've said, you know, I was placed on an antidepressant because I was very anxious, and it did help with the anxiety, but I had to stop. And then inevitably I'll ask, well, why did you stop? And they said, well, it's absolutely killed my sex drive. So I'd rather be anxious and have a sex drive than to completely compromise my relationship. So prevalent is this complaint.
Right. Well, you know, it's very interesting, too, now you mention it. There's a lot of women going through perimenopause.
Yeah.
And what's happening is their progesterone levels are dropping.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And when your progesterone levels drop, you can become very anxious because the metabolites of progesterone help calm you down and they just make you feel good.
Yeah.
And so when your progesterone levels drop, and I see this so much, these middle-aged women all of a sudden having all this anxiety and on edge all the time, not sleeping, and they're given an antidepressant and a tranquilizer instead of having their hormone levels checked and maybe supplement with some bioidentical progesterone.
Yeah, as a topical cream or perhaps, you know, even as a prescribed oral medication.
Or even micronized progesterone.
Right,
just before bedtime.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and speaking of hormones, another big libido robber, and this is in younger women, is women who take oral contraceptives. Many women notice a big change in their sexual response when they go on the pill. They may take it to regulate their periods or for contraception purposes or because they have bad skin, acne, and then they say it kills my sex drive. Have you found that to be the case?
Absolutely. What's happening is that when you take a hormonal contraceptive, a hormone birth control method, it increases the protein that binds your sex hormones as they go through your blood. So that would be primarily testosterone and estrogen. Now, women have testosterone, as we mentioned before, about a tenth of the testosterone that men have, but it's very important for us. And the protein that binds estrogen and testosterone has a preference for testosterone over estrogen. But when you
so it might help your acne, because acne might be testosterone-related, but it doesn't do a lot of good for your sex drive.
Right. Well, what happens is that the amount of testosterone that's free in your blood to actually bind to the cells drops quite a bit. And if you're one of those women that doesn't have what we call efficient testosterone receptors, which means you need a lot of testosterone to have the same effect as another woman who might have a good effect with just a little bit of testosterone, that drop in testosterone, you're going to really significantly feel it. It's going to impact your libido. Some women have difficulty lubricating on arousal. Even the opening of the vagina, some of that tissue is supported by testosterone, and it can become red and inflamed and cause pain, and what we call vulvodynia. And some women are experiencing this just from being put on birth control pills.
Yeah, it's pretty devastating. I guess there are other medications that can cause problems, perhaps beta blockers, blood pressure medications. Generally, these medications slow you down and they impact sexual performance. Also, for some patients who suffer from urinary frequency, the drugs that reduce urinary frequency seem to create problems.
Well, and, you know, now that you mention that, I also want to mention very common medications, because the ones that decrease urinary frequency are going to give you a dry mouth, they can give you constipation, but people don't often think about cold medications, cough medications, and decongestants.
Absolutely, those allergy season,
Oh, yes. So
that's very interesting. I think that's going to be a real aha for some women out there, because they're coping with their allergies and they're taking strong allergy medications, but it's the ones that have the D usually that create more of a problem. That can literally turn your lubrication down under into library paste.
Absolutely. And even if they're using lubricants, which I definitely recommend women use lubricants. I mean, even if they lubricate okay, because there could be that one day, you know, that's what they're there for. But they'll find that, I don't know what's going on, but it's taking me forever to reach orgasm. Mm-hmm. And it could be a cold medication, a decongestant.
Wow. That's such an important insight. Well, okay, we've got lots of useful pearls for women dealing with what is it? A very prevalent problem, female sexual dysfunction, FSD, as it's now called. And that's what your practice is all about, in addition to not just restricted to women, but also to men and couples. And so what's the call to action? You have a website. It's great. Lots of resources there. ReclaimYourSexuality.com. What can people find there?
Yes, I encourage people to log on. I frequently post articles having to do with sexual dysfunction or sexual dynamics. And right now, as a matter of fact, I have an option 5 reasons why your sex life isn't where you want it to be. So if you've ever wanted to kind of peek into the office of a sex therapist, I put there the 5 most common reasons, psychological reasons, that your sex life is suffering. So really check it out, and I encourage questions anytime.
Great. And also, you will be conducting some workshops, I understand?
Right now, I'm really doing some private talks for some different corporations, but as soon as I have some public talks, I'll put it out there and put it in the Twittersphere, and you'll all know about it.
And you're on Facebook as well, so you can click on your Facebook site and follow you.
Facebook and Google Plus, yes.
Excellent. All right. So, and give out your office number for those interested in consulting you in New York City. You're in Manhattan, correct?
I am. The number you can reach me on is 917-454-8444.
Please repeat.
917-454-8444.
Okay. But the coolest thing, and I'm looking at your professional resume, and this I'm totally impressed, is that you're a professional consultant for CSI New York.
I was for a very short period of time.
Okay.
When they first started, and TV is so fickle, I have literally scripts and scenes that were shot, and then one day they called up and said, you know, we want to go in a totally different direction. I said, okay.
Was it the sex crimes unit thing? Is it that whole, yeah. You know,
you know what? I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about something that didn't happen.
Okay.
But it was
It's proprietary information. In other words, I can envision where they would say, look, we've got this program coming up about a shoe fetishist. And we've got to talk to a sex therapist, a professional medical psychiatrist who deals with sex therapy to find out if this script is authentic about, you know, whatever, some kinky plot of the CSI.
One of the ways that they wanted to develop one of the characters, and then they just, after a while, decided that it was a little too complex, and they wrote it out of the storyline. So,
that's too bad. All right, well,
yeah.
if you don't make it in, in TV, I think there's plenty of opportunities for you.
Absolutely.
Nevertheless, all right. Thanks very much for joining us, Dr. Madeline Castellanos.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.